softer than a Piper man. One day it calls to you.
Well, I'm back. This is Susan Santiago, and thank you for joining me this morning on Pieces of Peace. Dwayne Hunn is the executive director of People's Lobby, Inc. He's a former member of the Peace Corps, having served in Pakistan's rural construction and also in Mumbai, India's urban community development. His training was in Vermont, South Bronx, and Columbia University. Dwayne has worn many hats. He's been a builder, teacher, political organizer, small businessman, affordable housing developer, and he holds an MA in broadcast journalism from San Francisco State, an MA in public policy, and a PhD in government from Claremont Graduate University. Dwayne Hunn was named in the Who's Who in American Colleges and University and the Who's Who in California in 1986. He's on the phone with us this morning to tell us more about the People's Lobby, and he also has an interesting story to tell us titled, Did That Government-Sponsored Program Called the Peace Corps Deviously Push This Former Peace Corps Volunteer to Worship False Gods? Good morning, Dwayne.
Hi, Susan.
How are you
Thanks
doing this morning?
Again.
I'm sorry, say that again?
Thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. Hey, Dwayne, as I mentioned, you're currently the executive director of the People's Lobby, Inc., and tell us more about this and its connection to the American World Service Corps, or AWSC.
People's Lobby, Inc., in the 70s, trained groups across the nation to do grassroots initiatives that would, in your own state, write your own laws. We became very good at that. We passed the Political Reform Act here in the state of California with help from Common Cause and Jerry Brown. And then we went and passed the Western Bloc Nuclear Moratorium Campaign, ran 16 states that all put anti-nuclear moratorium campaigns on their ballot. And we think that when you ran through 16 states called the Western Bloc, you educated the country a great deal, and it's ironic that just a few days ago they closed down the nuclear plant or said they're not going to extend their contracts out here in California. So it takes a long time to educate a nation on what we felt were the dangers, both with the radioactive waste and the stuff they were hiding from the public back in the 70s. But from that initiative process, today running a much smaller People's Lobby, I'm trying to get laws enacted not through the initiative process, though we could start doing that again if there were enough funding and enough people interested in it. We've written laws. One is called the American World Service Corps National Service Proposal that proposes to put 1 million Americans a year into voluntary national service. We presently have 1.4 million active military, and we're saying we ought to have a peaceful, productive army that puts Americans into doing national service voluntarily, but with incentives to get at least 1 million a year to do it for 20 years, for one generation, basically, and let them work on development and the problems that we have with refugees and the problems we have after climatic disasters, which are piling up, and have these people serve their country and the world in that manner, which would grow the Peace Corps and grow AmeriCorps, because it's not a new program. What the legislation proposes is that you take already existing good organizations that are doing good, Peace Corps, AmeriCorps, Habitat, Doctors Without Borders, Head Start, et cetera, and local community service organizations, and give them more volunteers who would work full-time for a year or two, and they'd get a stipend and educational benefits in return. But you'd start knitting the country back together again, and you'd start raising the public policy IQ of those who served.
Excellent. And don't we already have that policy? I don't know if it's in individual universities, but it's kind of coming back to me where you do get so much money off your tuition if you work in certain areas, which your major is in. For I think
yes.
Like education is one.
Starting to do that in more and more universities, and universities give fellowships more often now to people who do Peace Corps service. If you do Peace Corps service, you're likely, or your chances increase a great deal to get a fellowship if you want to go to college or grad school after that. And there are more and more government programs that do this. If you do AmeriCorps and things like that, you get some sort of tuition benefit, which is written into our bill. If you do 2 years of American World Service Corps National Service in, say, the Peace Corps or in AmeriCorps or in that West Community, West Marin Community Services District. I don't know what they did. You introduced it at the beginning of the show. But if they had 4 or 5 volunteers working for them full-time for a year, could they get more done? I think almost everyone would say yes. If Homeward Bound, who deals with the homeless in Novato, had one AmeriCorps volunteer some time ago, and they loved having that volunteer, they could get more done. But if you had 5, could you get 5 times as much done? Something like that would happen. And if you do that service, then when you get out, you get the tuition credit. For 2 years of service, you get 4 years of college tuition paid, 2 years of state college tuition, and 2 years of community college tuition is paid for. And if I did it and I didn't need the education anymore, I could give it to my niece, nephew, grandson, cousin, aunt, or uncle, whoever I wanted to give it to, I could give it to, and they could get their education done.
That's an excellent program.
It's tough to get going, and if any of your people that listen to this feel like they'd like to push that, then Congressman Huffman needs to hear more about it, and Senator Boxer and Feinstein need to hear more about it. And just as a gentle aside, the legislation also urges, it can't require, but it urges other nations to do the same thing, to build their own national service corps, primarily in a large part because of climatic changes that are going on. The nation's got to start dealing with these things and sending armies that aren't armed with guns, but sending armies in sandals to go and help nations that are having trouble with what's going on with climate change and refugee crises. But in that bill, urging other nations to do the same, back in the 80s when I was pushing something close to this, I pushed for the creation of a joint American-Soviet Peace Corps. And it didn't get traction for 4 or 5 years. And then Senator Boxer decided she liked the idea and she picked up on it. And she introduced it as House Resolution 1807, a joint U.S.-USSR Peace Corps. And it was moving along, and then the Soviet Union fell apart, and the pieces fell by the wayside. And just in the last 2 weeks, I've been in contact with her office again, asking if she might consider reintroducing it now, before she leaves office in 6 or 7 months. And I'm encouraged by the reaction. There are very few legislative days left in the Senate, so their staff is doing something with it. They're visiting the website, and they're just calling me on the phone, and we're talking about it. But if you thought that was a good idea, and imagine if we had done that since 1989, and this was what really intrigued Boxer. As I said, if you did this 20, 30, 40,000 times, you being a Soviet, or your husband being a Soviet, say Ed was a Soviet and I were an American, and we served together in an underdeveloped country, and we lived together after we taught at the school or worked in a public health clinic or did whatever we did, then after 20, 30, 40,000 of those connections, you wouldn't be having the problems today you have with the Soviet Union and the Putin and clashing with America, because you'd have too many friendships and you'd have too many connections that would make things work themselves out. We have Russian astronauts and American astronauts in space, and they're not cutting each other's throats. They're friends after they served up there for a while. Well, we ought to be doing that on Earth. And again, if any of your people take the time to write or call Huffman, Boxer, or Feinstein on any of those issues. And Feinstein was very helpful with the American World Service Corps proposal. For about 2 years, we had phone conversations going on between her and her staff, but then things, then Ted Kennedy died, and anyway.
Wow. You would think that at this time period in the world right now, that something like the American World Service Corps would be a great diplomatic entity in which to help toward, at least toward, moving toward a peaceful world, ultimately.
Yes, I can't see how. Not many people argue with it. And the Peace Corps is well liked. And the Peace Corps, you know, is only about 8,000 volunteers joining the Peace Corps right now. If this bill were enacted, the Peace Corps would grow to the numbers that Kennedy wanted it to be. Kennedy wanted it to grow quickly during his tenure to 100,000, because one of his quotes was that when it hits a million, then it'll be significant in terms of what it can do for the world and for Americans. But on top of that, it would just make Americans so much smarter on world affairs. I mean, say if George W. Bush had done the Peace Corps for a few years instead of his only foreign experience being going to restaurants in England, then he would not have taken us into a $7 trillion war that was in the wrong country and at the wrong time and for the wrong reasons. You understand the world a little bit better, and with the world as complex and as dangerous as it's becoming, you got to do more of this kind of stuff, and we're not doing it. There's no fight against it. When I talk to congressional offices, 21 of them I talked to in person years ago, and all of them except for one was kind of borderline, supported it. But that, if they're not getting a ton of phone calls or a ton of letters mm-hmm. from people, and it's not high on the news media agenda talking about this kind of thing, which is an answer to so many of our problems. If we had had 10 million Peace Corps volunteers returning from service by now, 60 years almost, 55 years since the Peace Corps was started, rather than 220,000, then the world wouldn't have as many Talibans or crazies running around trying to, say, blow up this and blow up that, and we hate Americans.
Mm-hmm. So. Yes, and I think that something like the American World Service Corps would also, which the Peace Corps also does, would both sides would learn that the other is there is no other. We're all the same.
Yeah, you're all people, and you just got a little variation in tanning colors.
Yes.
And I don't, you know, people sometimes think the American World Service Corps is in competition with the Peace Corps. It is not. It uses the Peace Corps as one of its platoons, and it's just kind of a small umbrella organization that makes sure that if you did the American World Service Corps and said, I'd like to do it through the Peace Corps, or I'd like to do my 2 years of service through AmeriCorps, or I'd like to do my 2 years of service working for the, you know, Novato Human Needs Center, then they make sure that you get your stipend and you get your college education, or you get to pass it on to whoever you want, a college or vocational training. So it would just, and it would get Americans more involved in service, which most of our generals, almost every one of them, from General Zinni to the recent general commander of the Special Forces, thinks that Americans ought to do national service, and it does not have to be military. It mm-hmm. should be some sort of national service, and we've gotten away from that when we had the Greatest Generation, because if you look at the Greatest Generation during the Depression years, about 30% of the country, depending on how you want to look at it, 30 plus percent of the adult population was doing national service. And that bound the nation together, and all the people, the white Polish Union guys got to know black guys from the South, and it knitted the nation together, and we haven't been doing that for a long time now.
And let's get to your storytelling. I also want to mention to our listeners that Duane has a couple books out, Every Town Needs a Castle, and Ordinary People Doing the Extraordinary. And I want to mention that Ralph Nader chose People's Lobby book, Ordinary People Doing the Extraordinary, the story of Ed and Joyce Koppel's People's Lobby, as one of the 10 best books to read for 2009.
You did some research.
Oh, yes, yes, but that's very impressive, Dwayne Hunt. But I do want to, before we run out of time, I do want you to tell your story. And I know you're a writer, and the name of the story is, did that government-sponsored program called the Peace Corps deviously push this former Peace Corps volunteer to worship false gods?
This was something I was going to do for the NorCal Peace Corps Story Jam, but I was out of town for a while, and they found enough story jammers. But the story jam goes like this. Through grade school, high school, and college, this Catholic boy averaged Mass and Communion about five times a week. Then this sophisticatedly advertised government-sponsored program, called the Peace Corps, lured this innocent boy into Urban Community Development Service in the slums of Mumbai, India, in the late 60s. Looking back with great acuity, I'm pretty sure the government's devious purpose was to have me acquire a taste for worshiping false gods. These false gods were often tin-shaped rectangles, contrite ceramic open faces, or plain old stateside faucets. The Peace Corps' taxpayer-sponsored purgatory led, taught, and brainwashed me to genuflect before these false gods. At least five times a day, facing in any direction, I increasingly honored and prayed to them by swigging, showering, washing, peeing, and flushing their communion with me. Recently, I had a cruising reunion with my urban community development group and concluded that they too had been brainwashed into acquiring the habit of genuflecting to these false gods. We plowed up Alaska's Inner Passage on our 965-foot Norwegian Jewel with its 1,000 members, staff, and 1,500 cruisers, spewing a gallon a second of fossil fuel as we passed Ketchikan, Juneau, Sitka, Skagway, etc. Sitka, where two American companies have purchased the right to transfer 3 billion gallons of water a year from Sitka's Blue Lake Reservoir that holds trillions of gallons of water and tank it to a water processing factory they are constructing in Mumbai, where, four decades before Flint, our UCD group acquired Flintish tastes. The Norwegian Jewel provided plenty of water around us and on board. Plenty of Indian staff were among the 1,000 attendants who smiled through their long days and made us comfortable. But the glaciers around us and those we helicoptered down to were frowning as they dramatically shrunk from what they were 20 years ago, with cutting blue rivulets of tears flushing what used to be virgin ice into the salty sea. Fellow UCD PCVers Barry and Gretchen lived in Chandawadi Municipal Chawls and then Bombay. One day they went to the water director for their area with a brownish jug of tap water with some living things moving around in it. The director took the jar off of water from Barry and Gretchen's side of the desk, looked it over, placed it on a table beside him and said something like, "It is nothing. It is nothing. It will be no problem, Sab." Marilyn and Marby lived in the government-built Shivdi Chawls. Rolling thunder in their walls alerted them that water was about to roll from their room's single pipe under which their buckets were lined up. If they missed their rumbling, rolling water, they would often have to wait several days for the next quenching, rolling thunder. My Worley Peace Corps neighbors, Worley Chawls Peace Corps neighbors, Kiki and Melody, lived in their 12-by-15-foot room like the other much larger Chaw families, and like most poor people, got water pressure for about an hour a day. After boiling their drinking water, this let them acquire about a bucket a day to bathe in. Alan Bruce lived in the Parsi Student Hostel, where the Bombay municipality turned the water on for about 20 minutes in the morning and then 20 minutes in the evening. Each resident had a large earthen vase in their room in which they stored about 2 gallons for bathing, drinking, etc. Al was also the center on our UCD Bombay basketball team. Prior to our games, most of us would meet at Gordon's, a grade one restaurant, for a pregame meal. It was Big Al who called the waiter over and complained about the wormy thing squiggling around in his glass of water. "Ah, Bodo Sahib," said the waiter, who took the glass, picked out the squiggly thing, threw it aside, and replaced Al's glass on the table. I had a dented cement-crusted bucket of water delivered to my 6x12-foot former file cabinet living space each morning, some of which I would boil and pour into a black Pukka orbital jug for later drinking. The bottom side of the removable top on the black Pukka orbital jug also served as my rubber band storage place for cooking butter. Then, on a butter frying day, I noticed some vanilla things moving below my taped butter in my black Pukka jug. Now, they may be useful for cleaning wounds, but I don't like watching maggots squiggle on the walls of my drinking water container. I scrubbed that sucker clean with boiled water and started again. The maggots returned. I did not have to take the maggots in to prove my case to Ira Kay, our Western Regional Director, to have Peace Corps purchase for me a sanctified statue, which only looked like a ceramic and charcoal water strainer, to which I genuflected daily. At the corner of our Worley Charles Street was a fairly large Grade 5 restaurant, opened on two sides, with wooden overhead fans hanging from the ceiling trying to chase the flies away. In the far corner was a stand where they stacked dirty dishes next to two buckets of water. It was next to a spigot that had a couple inches of a ragged T-shirt hanging from it over a tin-plated drainage channel. Next to that was a place to stack dishes and glasses of water ready to be taken to the tables. The waiter knew me, so upon sitting at my circular table, he immediately brought me a bottle of Fanta orange soda. Then he picked up some dirty dishes, walked to the two buckets in the far corner, soaked the dishes in the first bucket a few times, and then soaked them in the second bucket a few times. He then ran water from the ragged spigot over them and stacked them in the, quote, ready-to-serve line of dishes and water glasses. My waiter then does what cowboys used to do prior to the invention of hankies. He blew his nose with thumb and first finger pressure, shook his fingers toward the ground, and then ran his fingers under the water from the ragged spigot. He then inserted three fingers into three glasses of water, pressed them in his one hand, walked them to my table, and placed them next to my Fanta orange soda. My inner Yoda said something like, "Water, swig that, me not." If you wonder why your tap water must be tested and bottled water is not, why designer bottled water has a 280,000% markup, why you got angry with the California suburbanite spraying down his driveway in the middle of a drought, then maybe you are ready for a stint in that brainwashing Peace Corps purgatory where just water washing, not waterboarding, makes you genuflect. You may also be ready to support People's Lobby-sponsored American World Service Corps National Service Congressional proposal that would grow the Peace Corps by fielding 1 million National Service volunteers per year to ease the burden on our soldiers, deal with climate change and disasters, and teach us to bless ourselves with holy water before wars start over the heavenly stuff. Visit www.peopleslobby.us to learn and help make robust national service happen. By the way, during this talk this morning, I'm swigging from a recycled plastic bottle filled with public tap water an hour ago. According to Consumer Reports, it costs $346 to buy a bottle of water each day for a year versus 48 cents to fill that bottle with tap water for a year. If you're one of those religions who believes in purgatory, reincarnation, or caring for the earth for seven generations that follow, you better treat that stuff in this bottle like what it is, holy water. If you don't, in your next life, you may be praying to a spigoted wall in the hopes of hearing some clinching, rolling thunder that spews holy water. And if you're driving down a Marin County road listening to 89.9 with thirsty kids in the back seat asking, "Are we there yet?" ask them if they'd like you to stop for water in Mumbai, Flint, or Bolinas. Cheers. Thank you.
Bravo. Excellent Duane, thank you so much, and thank you so much for the work. And keep the storytelling going. It is very, very good.
Oh, thank you.
Well, we have to say goodbye. And again, you want to give us that website where our listeners can go to learn more about the American World Service Corps?
Just go to peopleslobby.us, all one word, peopleslobby.us, and dance around a little bit. So we're rebuilding the website, but it's got information there. And it, and if you could contact Boxer, Feinstein, or Huffman's office, please do that. That's the more they hear from people supporting these kind of issues, the more likely they are to do something.
Thank you so much, Duane.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
My guest was Duane Hunn. He's the executive director of the People's Lobby. And I want to thank all of listeners for joining me this morning on Pieces of Peace. It has been an absolute pleasure, as always, bringing you all these wonderful, talented, motivated individuals. And don't forget, this is Susan Santiago saying peace, and don't forget, an enemy is one whose story we have not heard. Peace to all of you.
Last British man o' war, the Douglas he hauled to.